And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom and welcome to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. This is Jeremy Gimpel. I'm here with Ari Abramowitz, and we are broadcasting the truth from Israel. I've just got back from Toronto, Canada, and it's so good to be back in Israel. It's the first time I've ever spent Yom HaAtzma'ut, Israel Independence Day, and Israel Memorial Day outside of Israel. It was weird.
Yeah, what was that like?
On one hand, I felt on the other side of the world. I'm away from Israel, as the entire country is probably the most unified day in Israel's culture is on Memorial Day. And Israel Independence Day is like the latest of all holidays that you just feel Israel celebrating, whether they're religious, not religious, secular, observant. Everyone is out barbecuing. Fireworks are all over the country. And I missed it all. But at the same time, although I was on the other side of the planet, the Toronto Jewish community there held an amazing event. 2,000 people were there. It was beautiful. It was spiritual, which shocked me.
Well, that was for Independence Day, Yom HaAtzma'ut. I'm just interested because here in Israel, Yom HaZikaron is like Yom Kippur. It's like, you know, the Memorial Day is like the Day of Atonement. The whole country, it comes to a standstill. You look at like aerial satellite footage of the roads, and it looks like it just presses pause, other than an occasional Arab car that drives up the highway. In the middle of the highway, everybody just stopped. It is the most solemn and deeply palpable day in the whole country. Is it also like that for both of those days there?
It was interesting.
Because I've imagined that Memorial Day in America may get confused, and they may make it a little bit like Memorial Day for America.
Well, it definitely wasn't like what Memorial Day is in America, because it's like, yeah, it's definitely not the same. How could it be the same? But what they did was really marvelous. The evening before Yom HaAtzmaut, because as you know, all Jewish holidays begin in the night before. Shabbat begins Friday night. Passover begins the night before. It's always the night because, you know, as it says in the book of Genesis, and there was evening and there was day one. That's how the Bible begins. That's how days are counted. So Israel Memorial Day was still in its active in the whole ceremony and celebration. Everyone came together still in the late afternoon, early evening. And the first hour of that celebration was dedicated to Israel Memorial Day. And it was a very touching, moving. I mean, people were absolutely in tears. And then from that, it transitioned into a Yom HaAtzma'ut event celebration. And it was just done so well, because it's a hard transition to make, to go from mourning and crying to all of a sudden band music celebrating. But the way they did it was masterful. I was able to speak for the Yom HaAtzma'ut part of the event, and it was really beautiful being that ruach, that spirit from Israel, to bring it to Toronto, because the people
in Toronto... It's a huge responsibility.
Oh,
and you know what,
I want you to know, I've never been so nervous before any talk I've ever got. I've spoken to bigger groups, but somehow those 2,000 Jews in Toronto on Israel Independence Day, I am like the spokesman of Israel for the Jews there. I was...
Yeah, you told me that you actually wrote a speech.
Yeah, I wrote a speech for the first time.
That's a big deal. And to contrast what was going on with me, I was in Israel for Memorial Day, and I was the MC of the event at Ammunition Hill. Mm. I don't know if you know what happened at Ammunition Hill, but it was the fiercest battle in the Six-Day War. It's like the Temple Mount of Memorial Day. Maybe not the Temple Mount, because Har Herzl is like...
Well, just so many soldiers died there because it was such a fortress for the enemy.
Right, but I was the MC for this event for the Lone Soldier Center. Mm. And that's like a difficult balance to strike, because as I'm speaking about it, I don't want to just speak about the lone soldiers and what it's like for them to come and to volunteer, because really, I explained to the whole group that was there, every soldier in the Israeli army is really there on a voluntary basis. You can get out of it if you want to. And we all know that, you know, that reserve duty is just a technicality. Like the draft is a technicality. People come because they want to be there. Just go to Har Herzl, Mount Herzl, and do the math on the headstones. and how many 15-year-olds lied about their ages in order to be able to serve and to fight in the wars of Israel. And, you know, just the whole country, and also the fact that terror victims are memorialized. That's a really unique thing to Israel. That's not anywhere else, anywhere in the world.
Because we recognize. Yeah, exactly. It makes so much sense here.
It's logical just on the very shot, simple level, that to be a Jew walking around in the land of Israel and furthering the mission of the redemption, of the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, you are a soldier on the front lines. Every breath you take is imbued with meaning. And that's why terror victims are soldiers in their own right.
Yeah, they are warriors alongside the IDF.
Ironically, it's painful to say that because that's also the logic of the Arabs that blow up babies and women, and they say every single Zionist, every single Jew in Israel is a soldier. So by memorializing them, we're sort of confirming that. But the truth is that there is something to that.
Yeah, we are in a war for our survival, for our existence as a free people in our land. And when I was in Toronto, something really struck me, because I've celebrated other holidays outside of Israel, but I've never celebrated Israel Independence Day outside of Israel. And the emotional charge, the spiritual energy in the room was unparalleled. There is something about the land of Israel that has an energy to it, a power to it, that Passover simply doesn't have. It doesn't have the same oomph. I don't know how to explain it. There is a certain energy to the living, breathing reality of Israel that is alive today that can't be found even in the most holiest of holidays. There's something about the specific stones and dirt of Israel. I don't know. It's like this very physical reality, but somehow it gives off an emotional, spiritual energy, frequency charge that charges the soul of those who love her in ways that other things can't. And I had the opportunity to speak in a bunch of different schools when I was there, Jewish schools that I was there, and high schools and day schools and girls' schools and boys' schools. And I had an opportunity to speak to a non-Jewish group the day before. And it was interesting because there's a certain thread that permeates all of these different realities. Jews in America, if they are living by the Torah, they call themselves observant Jews. You heard of that term? It's like a very famous term. Like, oh, yes, of course I'm an observant Jew. And what an ugly term that is. I've really come to not like that term at all.
Yeah, well, it's not really the term I think you dislike. It's the underlying misunderstanding of what it is to be a Jew. And I actually want to make a video about this because I have, you know, we at this point in our lives, we have shtick that we say. And when I talk to friends of mine, I say, well, you're a good Jew. And sometimes they'll respond and be like, oh, I'm not such a good Jew. You know, I'm not so strict when it comes to keeping kosher. And sometimes on Shabbat, I don't keep Shabbat. I'm like, what does that have to do with the fact that you're a good Jew? Like, even if you don't do anything on the religion end of things, you're a Jew and you're a good person. So you're a good Jew. They see when I say a good Jew, they associate that in some way in their mind with, oh, the Jew part of them is like the religious ritual observance thing. And oh, they're not a Jew, they're not such a good one. But they may be a good person, but not a good Jew. Hmm. It's that sort of dualistic perception of what it is to be a Jew, where it becomes like a religion.
Well, I'll tell you, the thing that bothers me about it, although that's very an interesting thing, is that to be an observant Jew, I mean, you and I made a video about this a while ago. It's like I'm observing Judaism from the sidelines. I'm like watching it. It's something that I participate. I'm like looking at it. I'm an observant Jew. It's happening. I'm really a Canadian or I'm an American, but I'm an observant Jew. I like keep this ritual, this tradition, this heritage. But what Yom HaAtzma'ut has the power of doing is it has the transformational power to take people out of observing a religion and entering into a living relationship with the Jewish people, a living relationship with God, a living relationship with the reality of existence as a Jew in life. Meaning, we're not just observing a religion, but Yom HaAtzma'ut and our existence in Israel is a wake-up call. I mean, imagine celebrating a holiday, let's say Hanukkah or Passover. These are events that happened thousands of years ago that we commemorate once a year. But Yom HaAtzma'ut, and very soon, Yom Yerushalayim, Jerusalem Day, these are holidays that have as significant a historical, I mean, they're as biblically significant as Hanukkah. They are as important, and they're in our lifetime. It's not celebrating something that happened thousands of years ago. It's like we're establishing our holidays now because Judaism is alive. The Bible is alive. The Torah is alive. Our relationship with God is alive. It's not something that we're observing, yes, thousands of years ago, and now we observe these traditions. No, it's alive now in the center of gravity that's pulling all of this together, that's giving us the, it's like almost like a power outlet that we plug into, is the land of Israel. I was speaking to a tour group just last night, and I mentioned to them, I said, you know, a Jew can't receive prophecy outside the land of Israel. And if you want, this is probably true for all people around the world. Israel, the actual land, it's almost like an antenna that sets our frequency in a way that we can receive spiritual messages, spiritual clarity, in a way that we simply cannot outside the land. You eat of the fruits of the land of Israel and the vegetables of the land of Israel, those fruits and vegetables, those minerals and vitamins, they ultimately become your body. Your body is built out of the food that you eat. When you start eating of the fruits and vegetables of the land, your body starts to become one with the land. And then more and more clarity happens. And the most exciting endeavor that Ari and I, in my opinion, have ever taken on is that this Land of Israel network, that is a dream that is slowly but surely manifesting into reality through the support of all of our listeners and all of our viewers, we are taking on our newest project by moving our headquarters of the network into the Land of Israel Farm Network, unbelievable location. Hopefully, we're going to be moving there, what, in a few weeks?
That was a terrible explanation.
It was a terrible explanation. But, could you help me out? It's too hard to explain.
It's not even too hard to explain. For me, it's so overwhelmingly paradigm-shifting and exciting that if I don't really sit down and craft the explanation, it's going to sound like the Land of Israel Farm Network. Bottom line is, what's going on is that, as we know, the main primary shift that needs to happen in the hearts and minds of the Jewish people and the souls of the Jewish people is to realize, like we've said 1,000 times, we're not a religion, we're a nation, we're a family. Okay, and I just have to, a quick parenthesis, I just watched the old 1950s Ten Commandments movie. So much, trillion times better than the Gods and Kings nonsense that's out right now. And just to see it happen, to see the entire nation being birthed through the parting of the sea as that, like a birth canal, and we're birthed as a nation family, that's really what we are. And only when we're at home can that really manifest itself. And that's why the world is attacking the land of Israel itself, the state of Israel, our return to our land. Listen, Iranians can say, oh, well, the Jews we have no problem with. We have a Jewish community here in Iran. As long as they profess anti-Zionism, we're totally great with them. And they actually treat them really well there in order to prove that that's the case. But the real, because they recognize the real war against the Jewish people is in the land of Israel. And the war is happening in the hills, in the hearts of Judea and Samaria. That's the front line.
Well, I want to explain one thing important. Why is that the war? Why is it about the land? I mean, land are just rocks and stones. Yes, there's a spiritual energy to them. But when you look at the Torah, the base covenant with Avraham Avinu, the base covenant with Abraham wasn't about the Torah. It wasn't about the holidays. It wasn't about the prophets. The base covenant with the Jewish people and God was the promise to give the land of Israel to Abraham and his descendants forever. The base contract, covenant, relationship that we have with God is the land. Isn't it ironic that there's this little country the size of New Jersey and the entire world is obsessed with taking it away from the Jews? What they're doing spiritually is they are attacking the base covenant we have in the land of Israel. So let me just explain. The land of Israel headquarters.
You know where I was going with that.
I don't know, but I want you to continue. Is in the heart of Judea.
That's exactly where I was going.
The heart of the West Bank, as the world calls it.
Where we're building our studio. We're going to have a satellite studio in Jerusalem. But our primary studio that we're building is counterintuitive. A lot of people say, what are you guys doing? You're to build it there. It's like it's not only in the quote unquote settlements in the hills of Judea. It's on a mountaintop of critical strategic importance where there's literally nothing between Arab villages and the Dead Sea. If we don't go there and build this up and make this happen, then our cousins will. And it will be funded by the EU and the UN, and it will further weaken the state of Israel and the Jewish people. And we're on this beautiful mountaintop, which, by the way, everybody that's listening, their friends, families, congregations, groups are cordially and warmly invited to come and visit us at this studio. Because when I say it's breathtaking, I always hear this term breathtaking view. Oh, the view is breathtaking. I've never really experienced a breathtaking view until I went here. Because when I went and when I walked out of the car and I saw this, I literally went like this. I was like, I couldn't breathe. It was so overwhelming. And I had the same feeling you did, which is, this is where it needs to be. This is where it needs to happen. If real truth and real wisdom and the light of Israel, the underlying beauty is going to come out, it's going to be from this place.
Listen, this network is more than just us teaching Torah, more than just broadcasting the true news from Israel. We are a movement that is fighting for the future of Israel. And right now, the chopping block, what's on the front lines, is Judea and Samaria. And we have gone to the most strategic location in Gush Etzion, in Judea, in the West Bank, and we are establishing a cultural hub, a spiritual hub, a broadcasting network where people can come, they can sleep there, they'll be able to stay there. It's under construction now, but imagine in our lifetime, we have the opportunity to do something to stop the two-state solution. We can do something to strengthen the Jewish homeland. We have something, it's Zionism in action in the truest way possible. When the early pioneers came here, they were draining the swamps of the north and they were cultivating the desert to blossom. And here we are now, taking a relatively desolate, arid, empty land, and we're starting to landscape it. We've planted 200 olive trees with the help of people from around the world, and we're only continuing to grow. And so the Land of Israel Network is moving to our new headquarters. And if you all want to see it, we're going to be putting out a video very soon to at least give you a taste of what it looks like there. We brought a drone out and we've done some aerial footage. It's so marvelous and majestic and wondrous that to be a part of it is to be, it's like dreamers. When we return to Zion, we will be like dreamers. It's as if now the dreams of the prophets in those mountains is where Amos received his prophecy. Literally right there. And so to be a part of that and to rebuild the mountains of Amos in our lifetime, to broadcast the truth from the heart of the battle against the BDS movement and the European Union and all these nations that are turning against us. And what is our response? Our response isn't to fight them or to attack them. We're just continuing to bring and build.
That's what I'm realizing, you know, in my personal life, when you go through really, really, really hard times, Rabbi Nachman said something very deep and very wise. He said, "Kol ha'olam kulo gesher tzar me'od." The whole world is nothing but a narrow bridge. Va'ikar lo lefached klal. And the most important thing is not to make yourself scared, is not to be afraid. Now, what does that mean? You know, that's meant different things to me at different times in my life. But what you just said is you nailed it right there. Because we need when you're going on this narrow bridge, what's the worst thing you can do?
Look down.
Look down. You got to stay focused on where you're going. And if you start looking at what do other people think of you? Do these people like me? You're just going to crumble. We need to stay focused. And part of that focus that we need to do is to overcome certain natural predispositions that we have as Jews that's just wired into our psyche. You know, when it says in the Talmud that we're Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim, Jewish people are merciful, the son of merciful children of merciful, like to a fault, meaning when you're too merciful, you end up causing injustice and terrible things to happen. And these Jews that are right outside, because what are we doing essentially? There's this beautiful little village of Jews called Ibei HaNachal. And these are Jews that are on the front lines. They're on this hilltop. And they're, quote-unquote, settlers, settlement. And we're now settlers of settlers, meaning there are hilltops outside their settlement. And we are settling the hilltops outside their settlement. So we are settlers of settlers. And for these Jews to be living there, in harmony and serenity and in peace, but in with a certain righteous indignation and knowledge that they are living, we are living in our land, and it doesn't matter what the world says. If you could just tell this story, Jeremy, that happened with your parents and your brother, is that okay?
Goodness.
Because it's connected.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's so funny because my parents had a leak in a little vacation home that they purchased, I don't know, so many years ago in Tiberia.
It's like Tiberias. Yeah.
Tiberias. It's like, you know, like a little one bedroom, a little place like overlooking the Canary, like a beautiful, sweet thing. They had a leak coming in from their roof above. So my parents, right before Passover, you know, brought in a kablan to come and fix it. And he brought in some Arab workers to come in and work on it.
A kablan is a contractor.
And they, you know, they're fixing the thing. And my brother took his two older boys up to Tiberias for, like, you know, school's on break. He took his oldest children up for a little vacation. He arrived there at nighttime and he was going to sleep there and wake up the next morning and, like, go swim in the Kinneret or whatever they had planned. He opens the door and the Arab workers that were working there were sleeping with their family in my parents' little apartment.
Cooking food. They're in the middle of cooking
food. Oh, yeah.
Food,
my whole, the whole kosher is the whole kosher kitchen
and
done.
And when it says their family, like, they have these chamulas. They have, like, family, cousins, and they had this whole big barbecue that they were in the middle of preparing, and your brother walks in.
My brother walks in.
And how did they do it? Let's just make it clear. They, because he's the contractor there,
he
needs to have
house.
A key.
Right.
He has a key to the house. So the level of chutzpah that these people have, they have a key, and they move in.
They moved in for Passover. They moved in for Passover. So my brother comes in, expecting to go to the little vacation apartment that my parents
He's got all have. His kids there with him.
He opens up the door, and he sees that there's Arabs here, and so my brother apologizes.
Oh, he apologizes to them.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to disturb your party here. And then walks out and then tries to find, like, another place to go. And it was already evening time. And then we didn't know what to do. And then my brother calls my parents. And my parents are like, oh, my goodness, well, how did this happen? And my mom's like, well, maybe you should make them a cup of coffee
make them
in the
coffee.
Morning.
Make them coffee. Because you know why it's so funny to me? Because the analogy that a lot of people say when it comes to Israel is we say, listen, imagine that you have a home. Okay, and then you have to leave that home against your will, that you own, and then you come back and people are living there in your home. That's what is happening. What are you going to do? Just let them live there? Make them a cup of coffee? The answer is yes. That's actually what Jews would do.
That's what the Jews.
That's
do.
What Jews do.
And so, in some way or another, I feel like this is.
I mean, what would they do?
What would who do?
What would this Arab contractor do if he walked into his house and there was a family of Jews making matzah brei?
I don't know. It might not turn out very well for the Jews.
It may not turn out very well for the Jews.
It was like a little analogy of the Jewish-Israeli conflict and the level of chutzpah and how the Jews have been dealing with the people that are here. I mean, they would really, most of the Arab world now would be just happy to throw Israel into the ocean and just be done with the whole thing at this point anyway. And we're still making, Netanyahu is now making an effort to bring in the Labor Party, the left-wing party, in order to start some new peace initiative and make them coffee and somehow reach out in appeasement to them.
It's so crazy that we're so extreme in this characteristic, in this attribute of the Jewish people, because of the neighborhood we're in. It makes it such a miracle that we are still surviving. I mean, imagine Gandhi was in Nazi Germany and he's like, I'm going to not eat. They're like, okay, we're going to not feed you. So that works out. And we're also going to kill you. Like, that wouldn't have worked out well. You know, I signed up and yesterday was my first day for my training, which is actually quite intensive, to become a hospital clown. Why? Because I'm going through a rough time, and to be able to bring light to people and to go to sick children and to make them laugh. I love the idea.
It's
and
a
it
huge
so
mitzvah
exciting.
To visit the sick.
It may
huge.
Be, it's a huge mitzvah. That's true. But I feel like I'm going to be getting a lot more from it than they will. Hmm. And the class was packed and they had to turn away people. And per capita, Israel has more hospital clowns than any other country in the world. Hmm. And it's only going up more and more and more. And there's such a huge demand for it.
That is so interesting.
And just that's what we're doing when they're recruiting their kindergartners to be homicide bombers and to cut heads off their teddy bears. And for us to be living as next door neighbors, could there be a sharper contrast?
Well, I think that's really what this is all about is, you know, the sin of being an observant Jew. Imagine how funny that sounds, right? That if you just see yourself, and this happens to Christians and non-Jews, of course, also, that they're a part of some religion, some sort of heritage, and it's a cultural reality that they're a part of. But to move from being an observant spectator on the sidelines to being an active player in the game, to be a character in the story, that's why the Bible is a story. You know, that's such a fundamental question. Why is the most holiest literature that changed the world forever Why is it a story? If they say the Torah is a law book, well, it should look like the Ten Commandments. It should just look like thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, guard the Sabbath and keep it holy, honor your mother and father. Lists of laws, but that's not the way the Torah is written. It's like Adam and Eve and Noah and his children and Abraham and Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, the children. They go down to Egypt, they're enslaved, they're redeemed, they go into Israel, they build a temple, the temple is destroyed, they come back, they build another temple. Like this whole narrative, there's a whole story throughout the whole Bible. And yes, wisdom and laws are interwoven within it, but really, it's a story. Why is the Bible a story, folks? Isn't that a fundamental question? If you look in Eastern philosophy, it's not a story. It's just like words of wisdom. You know, the river flows as your mind goes. You know, it's just like words that get you to ponder things. Why is the Bible a story? Well, the answer is that we are the continuation of the story. We are the next chapter in the book. All of us, if we see ourselves that way, are actors in God's story. We are the climax of God's story that's unfolding in Israel. And you know, there's a sentence, a phrase in Jewish tradition that says, "Daber me'at aseh harbeh." You know, talk little, but do a lot. And I feel like,
interestingly, yeah. Me and my family, my father at least, we read it wrong.
So here at the network, we're not just talking anymore, but we feel as though we are finding our place in the story of Israel, as we transition from being spectators to active participants in building the land, cultivating the land, in the strategic area in Judea, as we build our new headquarters on a farm in the most beautiful place in Israel. So first, every single listener out there is invited to come and visit our new studios, to come and stay with us, to be in the mountains, to tour with us. And second, if you want to participate with us, this is your opportunity to help us build the kingdom of Israel as we are building it together now.
But do not go to the donate button that you see below. Do not. We are about to launch the most, the only, the singular, and the most vital, critical, important campaign for this network that we've ever run. If you're wanting to donate, just hold tight. Hold tight, because we're going to be blasting that out there. And it's a cause match campaign, meaning for every dollar you give, for every shekel you give, for every euro you give, even though we don't get too many euros, interestingly enough, it's matched. It's matched. And we're only going to get that whole money if you're able to step up and be a part of this. And believe me, if you're able to come and see this, I mean, before we even realized what was going on, Jeremy, you literally went into debt to just put money into making this thing happen.
And when I saw it.
Meaning in the world of truth, this is buying Google when Sergey Brin was in college in his room and going to him saying, "Hey, I'm going to put in a few $100 and I just give me a piece of your stock."
Yeah.
That's what this is.
In the world to come, this is the most valuable stock you could possibly purchase.
Yes.
Folks, this is Ari and Jeremy from the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. And we will see you again next week as we transition into our new studios, please God. And get ready, folks. We're going to move into video as well. Shalom from Jerusalem.